John Steinberg, and I'm the President and Chief Operating Officer at BuzzFeed.
So what does that mean? COO, right, is the title. Well, what do you do?
So that's all the operations of the company. So finance reports into me. A lot of the sales operations report into me. Anything that has to do with the functioning of the company outside of the product development and also the editorial, which the editorial is Ben Smith, and all of the product and technical stuff reports into Jonah Peretti, who's our CEO.
So basically you're in charge of making money for BuzzFeed.
Right. And actually, we have a chief revenue officer as well. It's the making money stuff, but it's also the operational stuff. So I deal with the real estate. I deal with a lot of the board reporting stuff. It's not just money, but it's kind of the overall operations of the company.
And one of the things
is an important part of it, though. Yeah.
Obviously, keeps it all going. Right. One of the things that BuzzFeed is doing that has gotten a lot of, pardon me, buzz, is this term content marketing.
Yeah.
How do you define that?
We call it social advertising or social content advertising, and it's sort of been a journey. It's something that I started on with Jonah when I got here 2.5 years ago. We had no advertising and we had no revenue then. But we define content advertising is when brands create stories, messages, ideas that explain what they care about or what the products are able to achieve. It's more than just what I call a call to action in a vacuum. It's not saying just buy this stuff because I tell you to buy it. It's more informational and interesting in nature. It's almost like an advertorial in a lot of ways.
So who are you finding are your biggest customers when it comes to providing content like that?
Our biggest brand advertisers are any brand that cares about social and any brand that cares about content. So everybody works with us from Coca-Cola to Geico Insurance to Toyota to Samsung. The range is very, very broad. It's anybody that stands to create a benefit by telling a story behind what the product actually is or what they stand for. Direct marketing advertisers, that's not a good advertiser for us, but everything else is fantastic.
Now, this sort of advertising model is new. Was this something that you had to convince these brands to do, or were they kind of coming to you with this idea?
So what's interesting about this is there's nothing new about this. This harkens back to David Ogilvy advertising in the 1950s. It harkens back to all of the great advertising that used to be. Advertising got really bad in the past 20 years. It became banners that just screamed at people. When I got here, I looked a lot at the history of advertising and what great advertising used to be like. So there was a wealth to draw on. When we went and talked to brands about doing this years ago, it was new to try to explain this kind of return to old. But now, in the past year, every brand has sort of come around to it. Brands realize that for anything other than a transaction online, content advertising, social advertising is much better than a banner ad.
You say it's a return to old, but back in the days of the 50s, these were ad guys who were writing the copy.
Yep.
But are there journalists now creating the copy?
We have a completely separate team that works on branded content with agencies and brands. They're totally walled off from editorial, so there's a church and state there. There were ad guys doing it in the 1950s, but if you look at a great ad that David Ogilvy did or Lester Birnbach or Mary Wells, I mean somebody like that, those ads look more like the stuff that BuzzFeed does now. The David Ogilvy Rolls Royce ad, the only thing you can hear in a car going 60 miles an hour is the ticking of the clock because it's so quiet inside the car. That looks like a BuzzFeed ad. If you look at a banner ad that's running on a portal, that doesn't look like a BuzzFeed ad.
What about people who say, you know what, I need to know that I can trust my news site for being news? Can I tell the difference between that has been paid for and that's being generated because it's interesting?
Confusion has never been an issue that we've had. It's very challenging to grow a business from 15 to 230 people in a couple of years. So it's a lot of hard work, and we certainly had challenges, but that has never been a challenge for us. They're clearly labeled as yellow. You see the brand on it. It's brought to you by Coca-Cola or Samsung or whoever. That's never been an issue of confusion. I think a lot of the old media competitors try to bring that up as a way of kind of throwing a dig at us or something like that. But that's not factually based in anything.
So is what you're doing here sort of the future of journalism in the digital age? Because frankly, somebody has to pay for newsrooms to operate, right? And we know that ad sales are regular sort of ad sales are down.
What I like to say is when you hear the traditional media companies talking about the challenges that they have with ad revenue, and the challenges that they have of making a go of it, they have a broken ad product. The banner has been around for 18 years. It's virtually unchanged.
And when you say the banner, you mean like when I go onto a website and there's this just thing written at the top?
Yes.
That I never click on.
You never click on. Or even better yet, how about the banner that comes up before you can get to the article that you've got to wait, or click pass, right? That's a really bad product. It's been a bad product for 20 years. It's been unchanged. So the solution to make journalism work, to make great media work, is to come up with a great product. And if you look at what Facebook is doing with their ad product, or Twitter is doing with their ad product, I would say what YouTube does with TrueView, where you can skip the... These are great products. Great ad products allow a media business to thrive.
Now, when you say great ad products, mm-hmm. as a consumer, I kind of... The fact that I'm referring to myself as a consumer, it makes me kind of want to cringe. Do you know what I mean? This, like, ad products, it feels very sort of slick. Right. What do you think your readers are getting from these ads? Are they getting just, like, really clever ads? Or is this the opportunity for these brands, like Coca-Cola, et cetera, to start to become their own newsrooms in a way?
Yeah, I mean, you know, I look at a campaign that we did for AT&T recently, which was smartphones in the digital age, which was, you know, an example was, you know, how Romeo and Juliet was one example that we did. Like, what would it have been like if social networks existed during that time? And, like, you know, Juliet finds out that Romeo finds out that Juliet has passed away through like a status update type message, right?
It's
It's compelling, and people like it, and people know that AT&T brought that to them. But isn't that a better way to learn about the fact that you can you know, talk and surf at the same time than just a message just telling you that explicitly? I think that when we survey our readers and we talk to our readers, they know that it's advertising, they know that it's branded content, and it's a more compelling way to learn about the product, and it's less intrusive. Quite frankly, it's right there in the flow of things. It doesn't block them from getting to the content. It doesn't interrupt them from getting to the content.
So does that mean that this is the end, potentially, of the sort of, buy our soap, it's the best?
Yeah, right. I don't think that – I think that for direct response – things that you buy right by clicking on it right away, I think that there will be some gas left in the tank for that. But I do think that when you look at the earnings of and you listen to the conference calls of a company like the New York Times, and you hear on the conference call them talking, them saying, you know, the challenges that they're having in selling directly selling banners to their advertisers, but their advertisers want more high impact custom content type things. The writing is sort of on the wall for this. The brands do not want to buy those products anymore. They recognize what the consumer wants. Millennials are even more adverse to the in-your-face advertising than a prior generation. So yes, I do think in some ways there is an end to the buy our stuff because we tell you to type advertising.
So where's this going to go in the next sort of 5 to 10 years? If you can look in your crystal ball.
I think the most compelling thing that I can say on this is that mobile, in some ways it's a little bit annoying to keep hearing everyone say that mobile is the future, but if you look at the numbers on it, it becomes even more exciting. We've gone from about 20% of our traffic to 40% of our traffic being on mobile in the past, call it 18 months. I see no reason why in 2 years, 80% of our traffic can't be coming from mobile. You already see it with a platform like Twitter, where so much more of their traffic is mobile than desktop. And that's where the publishing products are really going to need to change. It's really going to need to be a flow. It's really going to need to be content that's in a stream, because there really is no room for stuff on the sides. The phone doesn't really allow for that.
But we know that when it comes to mobile, it's pennies versus dimes, right?
That, you know, that really isn't true. It's pennies versus dimes, again, on the banners. And I'm sorry to be repetitive about that, but most of the clicks in those banners are mobile, or what they call the fat fingers, where people touch them by mistake. When you look at the rates that a Facebook is getting on mobile, or you look at the rates that a Twitter is getting on mobile, if the engagement is there and the interest is there, there's no reason why those ad products will sell for less than desktop. In fact, we charge more for a comparable mobile product, a mobile ad unit for BuzzFeed, than we do on the desktop. And that's because on mobile, it actually performs even better. It has a higher click-through rate on mobile than it does on desktop. Facebook, you see the same thing.
Is BuzzFeed profitable yet?
We don't comment on that. I think Jonah Peretti, our CEO, has previously said that we had some profitable months where we didn't grow fast enough. We were behind on our hiring goals. Our goal right now is really to build all of the capacity that we bring on very quickly, you know, in a matter of, you know, call it 4 to 6 months, starts being profitable in terms of technology or in terms of employees that we bring on. The issue with the growth company is we're always investing and investing ahead of when those resources turn profitable. So now we're focusing heavily on video. We're opening an office in LA. We're hiring a lot of people to basically build a BuzzFeed on YouTube. That's going to be like another startup within a startup. So obviously that can't be profitable right away.
And where do you hope to see BuzzFeed in the next, like, you know, if we're sitting here exactly a year from now, what's going to be different?
Oh, I thought you were going to say, where would I see us even further down
oh,
the road?
Oh, yeah, let's go further.
Right, that's easier. So in some ways, you know, when I think about a year down the road, I tend to think very tactically on what we need to execute. But our aspiration is to be, we think no one's really building kind of the social era version of a Hearst or a Condé Nast. And that really is our aspiration.
That's amazing. I mean, that's a big goal to be, you know, Hearst, you sort of, it encompasses in my mind so many different things. It's such a name that is embedded in American history.
Right. I think that we feel that a lot of startups are very sort of short term in kind of their thinking or in kind of the scale of what they want to build. Jonah, many of our board members, they were all involved in building Huffington Post. And I think that there they wanted to build something really big, and they built something extraordinary. And I think with BuzzFeed, it's very similar what they want to do. We want to build something that's really big and enduring. We've gone from, you know, as I said, 15 people to, you know, 220, 230 people in the past 2.5 years. So there's no reason why we can't keep growing and keep rolling out new verticals, and the site can't keep getting bigger, and our ag products can't keep getting more sophisticated.
So you're going to keep hiring. What's your advice to journalist students or students who want to get into media, advertising? What's your advice to them?
I think there is an unbelievable opportunity in journalism right now, you know, in the branded content arena. I was actually up at Columbia, and Columbia Journalism School, I think about 5 or 6 months ago, and I got asked the question. I said, you know, I know that a lot of journalists don't want to be involved in advertising and branded content. You know, how many of you would be open to something like that? And I expected that there to be like very few hands that went up. I was shocked how many hands went up.
They got loans.
Well, yeah, but you know, we're reaching an era where the demand for people who can write great, compelling content in the advertising world is really enormous right now, and the people to fill those roles are great writers. And people who are comfortable doing that and want to do that, you know, every media company out there is trying to compete with us now by creating a branded content or a creative solutions type lab. So that's a huge opportunity for journalists. You know, I think that there's also a lot of demand for people, you know, on the editorial side as well. But I know that right now the growth on that ad side stuff is probably outstripping the editorial side.
And when it comes to the people who might say, you know, I haven't spent $40,000 for a degree in journalism to turn around a gif, as they're called, of,
right,
you know, the Speaker Boehner blowing his nose. There's some people who say that sites like, and particularly BuzzFeed, are sort of a little bit crass, maybe bringing down the level of conversation about politics and other topics. What's your response to that?
I think there's a real misperception about that. I think that we do a lot of fun, lighthearted content. And people look at just that, and they ignore the fact that we, you know, or don't notice the fact that we broke McCain's endorsement of Romney, or that Maureen Dowd referenced us in her column on Monday or Tuesday about Ben's interview with Senator Rubio, right? So, or that you know, we are the ones often breaking technology scoops about holes in different kinds of applications. So we have a substantial amount of hard-hitting news, and we have 90 reporters here now. What's interesting is that generationally, lighthearted content is very different. For a traditional newspaper, having a travel section or a leisure section or a food section might be the light vertical to companion politics or business. For us, it's animals and animated GIFs. But why is one type of leisure content okay and another type of leisure content isn't? If you're an 18 to 34-year-old person, you care about politics, you care about style, you care about technology, you care about business, and your leisure content is animals and GIFs. Why is that not okay?
It's okay. It's okay.
Right. So it's just a generational change, and I think that's why people sometimes think that like animated GIFs are taking the conversation down. I think animated GIFs are more interesting than a travel section. So like, what, you know, it's kind of to each their own.
So how much would you say that advances in technology have made it possible for BuzzFeed to be able to pursue this way of trying to pay for its journalism?
I would say that the technology stack that we have is very important, that we have a publishing system that allows people to optimize the content based on what's being shared. And I think that what's being shared is a very high standard. We ask our writers to write for the social web so that everything they write should be geared towards the eye of, would somebody share this? I think that's a very high standard. I think that's a higher standard than search engine optimization, than writing for Google. People will not share a politics story. They won't share a technology story that's not interesting, compelling, and says something positive about themselves, right? So I think that all of the technology that we have allows our people to kind of write for the social web in a way that they wouldn't have been had that technology not existed.
So what advice would you give to sort of to an outlet that might be considering getting into this? What advice would you give to WNYC, for example?
Yeah, I think that there's all sorts of ways that you can go into branded content and sponsored content. I think the most important ethical thing to do is to have the people that are working on it be completely separate than the people that are working on the editorial, so there are never any lines blurred, and to properly label what is the branded content. But beyond that, I mean, the interview we're doing right now, why couldn't you? You know, we work very closely with Virgin Mobile. He was just in the office today, their marketing lead. Why couldn't you interview him about the Virgin Music Festival coming up, or what Android apps they're rolling out and things like that, and have that appear as a sponsored clip that would come after this and clearly labeled as such. It's a little bit harder because if you tune in mid-broadcast, you might not be able, there's not sponsored running underneath the audio track. But certainly for something that you'd click to play online, that's possible.
John Steinberg, COO of BuzzFeed. Thank you so much.
Thank you.